I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the Department of Government Efficiency is here, and it could be the most significant thing to happen for taxpayers in generations. Plus, Washington and California drivers should prepare for sticker shock at the gas pump this holiday season. And Dow Constantine destroyed King County. Now he hopes to land a cushy seven-figure job. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Right now, you can get a year of Undivided for 30% off. Covers the whole first year of the Bob Ferguson administration. You can use the promo code WATCHDOG at patreon.com/undivided. Again, that's WATCHDOG at patreon.com/undivided. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz, the Department of Government Efficiency. I cannot even begin to tell you how excited I am about this. We usually don't start with national news, but this is not just national news. It's going to impact every single state in the union. It's going to impact every single taxpayer, hopefully. It's going to set up some conflicts, I imagine, with blue states like ours, like California, like all the states that have already pledged to push back against anything and everything the Trump administration does. So let's talk about this. I had to look up that it's Doge, right? Doge is what the cool online techies call it. I was like, how do you say this so I don't sound stupid? Because it's Dogecoin, so they named it Doge, but it stands for Department of Government Efficiency. Blah. So I think I'm saying it correctly. So it is going to be led by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. Which is fascinating because I thought Vivek for sure would prefer to be appointed to the Senate seat that is vacated by J.D. Vance. But he said, nope, this is what he's going to prioritize. This is from Donald Trump. I won't read the whole thing, but he put this out yesterday. I'm pleased to announce that the great Elon Musk, well, he capitalizes great Elon Musk, working in conjunction with American Patriot, also capitalized, these are titles now, Vivek Ramaswamy will lead the Department of Government Efficiency. Together, these two wonderful Americans will pave the way for my administration to dismantle government bureaucracy, slash excess regulations, cut wasteful expenditures, and restructure federal agencies essential to the Save America movement. This will send shockwaves through the system, and anyone involved in government waste, which is a lot of people, stated Elon Musk. So look, I sent this out yesterday. I was like, holy smokes, this is going to be probably the most significant thing to happen to the federal government in generations. And it's also going to be the thing that puts a target on Donald Trump's back more than anything else that he has done or said. And that is because there is a lot of money in government bureaucracy. There are a lot of people who are made very, very wealthy by lucrative government contracts that should not exist. There are a lot of people, frankly, and I hate to say this because, you know, I'm sure some of them are dedicated longtime public servants. There are a lot of people in federal government who shouldn't have a job. I hate the idea of anyone losing their job. But, you know, when Elon Musk took over Twitter, I think it was 4 out of 5 employees at Twitter that he let go because he thought he could run it more efficiently. And obviously he's been able to run it more efficiently. And so there are a lot of public servants in the federal government who don't need to have their job, and maybe they can work somewhere else in the federal government. There needs to be some consolidation that happens. But, you know, we talk all the time about the homeless industrial complex and the climate industrial complex in Washington state, where really they don't solve the problem, but they create a lot of jobs and they create a lot of funding via the taxpayers for people to get wealthy off of. You know, I look at the Climate Commitment Act, for instance, and all the people who are enriching themselves through the Climate Commitment Act on the backs of hardworking Washingtonians who pay more at the gas pump. Former state Senator Reuven Carlisle, who was the author of the CCA. Well, he left after the CCA passed. He left public service and he's now working in the private climate sector, making a lot of money off the CCA. So there's a lot of that kind of thing happening at the federal level, you know, in the war machine, for instance, and government contracts through there. So to me, again, if they do what I think they're capable of doing, because Vivek and Elon, these aren't lifelong government bureaucrats, so they can come in and they can look at it through the eyes of businessmen. And they're going to find, you know, in response to this, there were a ton of people on social media pointing out just individual instances of government waste. $20,000 to drag shows in Ecuador, $30,000 to study the secret language of butchers in Paris, $750,000 to the New York Metropolitan Opera fire alarm, $660,000 to study the impact that COVID had on Russian women. These are just $350,000 to develop AI smart toilets. I don't think Americans even grasp the level of waste that happens in the federal government. And this is something that was always told to me by my friends who were in the military, where they would have to, and this is really true for every entity. It's like, you want to spend the budget that's given to you by the federal government, or if it comes to the state, you want to spend the budget that's allotted to you by the state legislature. Because if you don't, the next time they go and look at the budget, they're going to slash your budget. So what would happen is, come hell or high water, they will spend the money that's allotted to them. They will find a way. I had friends in the military who said they would put in orders for like really expensive pens and pencils, because like they got to spend this money, right? So they would spend it on dumb shit, because they didn't want the next time a budget came up to get less money. So there's so many things. Elon Musk and Vivek, of course, have been on social media tweeting about what they're going to do and how it's going to work. Vivek wrote, "Over the last 2 years, the Supreme Court has ruled that the administrative state is behaving in wildly unlawful ways. But slapping the bureaucracy on the wrist won't solve the problem. The only right answer is massive downsizing." Elon Musk wrote, "All actions of the Department of Government Efficiency will be posted online for maximum transparency. Anytime the public thinks we are cutting something important or not cutting something wasteful, just let us know. We will also have a leadership board for the most insanely dumb spending of your tax dollars. This will be both extremely tragic and extremely entertaining." I have to agree, because some of the things I'm already seeing come out, the pork in the budget for just dumb stuff, not only here domestically, but also internationally. And I, again, you know, we don't often start the show with national stories, but this will have a profound impact on Washington State if they do what I hope they're going to do, and really taking it seriously to cut regulation, to cut wasteful spending, and to be good stewards of federal dollars. We get a lot of federal dollars in Washington State, whether it's for housing or homelessness. And if that money is not being spent on things that work, my hope is that we don't get that money anymore. I don't want, even if it's going into our state from the federal government and the money's got to go somewhere, our state government has proven that it is willing to waste, whether it's COVID relief funds, money that comes here to help with homelessness and housing, et cetera, we will flush it down the toilet. So I don't want to flush my fellow taxpayers' money down the toilet anymore. And maybe if the threat is either you use it and you have outcomes, or you lose it, oh my God, maybe we'll start having outcomes with some of the federal money that comes from Washington State. But again, it's going to be, we talked about it yesterday with sanctuary policies. The fact that Donald Trump has basically said in his new borders are like, if you're a sanctuary state or city, be ready, because it's not going to be pretty for you. And we already know that Bob Ferguson, our governor-elect, who spent his time as attorney general fighting Donald Trump, his first press conference as governor-elect was about how they're gearing up to fight Donald Trump. So I'm sure when it comes to federal funding, if the Department of Government Efficiency wants to cut things coming to Washington, they're going to try to sue. And the attorney general-elect, Nick Brown, will try to sue. So there's going to be a lot of head-butting. But it's time. I don't know how much, you know, there are some people saying, well, we'll see how unhindered they're able to do this job. Obviously, there's some, Congress controls purse strings. So there's some stuff that will have to be done in conjunction with Congress. They can't go in there and just immediately start slashing spending that has been approved by Congress. So there's going to be a little bit of that. But for instance, one of the things they want to do is eliminate full government agencies. Now, I'll be honest, I don't know the extent to which that's going to take congressional approval to actually eliminate full-blown government agencies. But remember, Republicans have control of the House and the Senate in Congress, and they'll control the presidency, obviously. So, I mean, if they're going to do it, now's the time. And they have to do it in a way where they make such significant cuts to the bureaucracy and to spending and to regulation that Democrats can't undo it in 4 years or 10 years or 20 years. This is going to be a great thing for taxpayers. It's going to be a very, very dangerous and scary thing for Donald Trump to embark on, and Elon Musk and Vivek, because when you start taking money away from people who have enriched themselves off the government bureaucracy, they're going to lash out. So this is going to be insane to watch this all play out. I hope they can go in there. And I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, which we'll get toward the end of the show, what you want them to focus on first. Is it cutting regulation to help businesses? Is it reducing just wasteful pork spending? Is it eliminating full-blown government agencies? You know, how would you prioritize your time if you're only, they're only going to be given 4 years? I mean, unless somebody, you know, the next president is someone more in line with Donald Trump who wants to keep the Department of Government Efficiency going. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm super excited about this. But I, do you understand what I'm saying, Nicole, in that I'm scared for Donald Trump?
Oh, I mean,
I'm genuinely scared for Donald Trump's safety.
Absolutely. We've been scared for his safety for a long time. We didn't think he'd make it to election day, really.
For a lot of different reasons, mm-hmm. right? And like, for instance, Iran was trying to kill him. And I get that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's not good for Iran for Donald Trump to be president. But this is a whole nother level. I mean, this machine that the federal government has become and all its different tentacles and people in the private sector who benefit from bloated government contracts mm-hmm. and money. Like, and you're going to take their money away from them?
I'm excited.
This is the most dangerous thing he's embarked on.
But it's being ran like a business. Like, that's what we need, is this country to be ran like a business. And I think his first 4 years, he tried that, but he was also a politician because he's still mm-hmm. running for the next 4 years, whatever. Now he's in there and it's just his 4 years. He's going to try and get as much as he can get done in 4 years and to leave a legacy of a successful business as the United States.
And one that can't be unraveled so quickly, right? And that's my concern. I mean, if you go in there and you, honest to God, I mean, Elon Musk was saying something about reducing it down to like 99 government agencies from like several hundred. I mean, I don't know if they can do that, but if you can achieve something like that where you're cutting full agencies, which means the people go,
right?
You can't just snap your fingers and hire everyone back and rebuild the agencies or whatever it is. And so some of that stuff would be somewhat permanent, right? And that's what needs to happen. And imagine if we can really get a hold of the deficit, which Republicans have contributed to deficit mm-hmm. as well. Like, let's not be naive. So Donald Trump really has to mean that like, hey, we're going to cut spending in a significant way. If you can get a hold of the deficit for future generations of this country and ultimately reduce the tax burden. You know, one of the things that Donald Trump has been talking about, which I got to be honest, would be great for my family, mm-hmm. is not taxing overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. My husband works a ton of overtime. But think about that. Think about how much that makes sense. And Democrats don't want that because they don't want to reduce any taxes. Like, once a tax is there, Democrats are going to keep it. They're mm-hmm. never going to be like, you know, have some of your money back.
Yeah.
But with the overtime, think about that. As Americans, most Americans work 40 hours a week. And so the federal government, like as a member of society, relying on roads and bridges and public transportation and mm-hmm. Public safety and whatever it is, and the army, you're paying into that. And of course, that's part of it. Like, to live in a civil society, I'm not the person who believes we have to abolish taxes or that all taxation is theft, like my father believed. But if you're working for, like, the average American, 40 hours a week, and you're getting taxed on that, why should an American who has to work more than that, like 50 or 60 hours a week, have to continue to pay taxes on anything over 40 hours a week? I think it makes perfect sense to say, if you're an American who has to work over 40 hours a week, then yeah, you shouldn't be taxed on that.
Well, I just think that would be a huge amount of money, right? Like,
yeah.
And some people, I don't know, is it necessary to work that? And I feel like there's going to be abuse to that system. Now, I like
What does the abuse entail? They work more? Like, they're doing something for that, right?
But I think you could probably lower people's salary and then, like, make the overtime pay more so that you are taxed less. Does that make sense?
I feel overtime pay is already usually more, right? Most people get like a time and a half for
I think that will be built into it, right? Like, yeah. I'm sure that they'll manipulate that system. Yeah. I think that the no tax on tips is probably a little more doable and seems a little more, it just seems a little more common sense to me to be, you know, you're literally tipping somebody that's not really, you're not paying them for your wages. You're paying them essentially to be nice.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that makes more sense to me because I still think that overtime is income. So we
get, I think they both make sense. Yeah. I like them both.
I mean, I like the idea, but I think, wow, I don't think that's going to help the deficit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're cutting a bunch of things, then it certainly could. But, you know, you look at the waste and we look at it at the local level, too. I mean, Governor Jay Inslee's right-of-way mm-hmm. program is the thing I continue to go back to. So Governor Inslee's like, we're going to clear the homeless camps from the from along the freeways, you know, after letting them mm-hmm. proliferate. And then we do the math and find out that they were spending about $1 million at one point per person to remove mm-hmm. them from a tent along the freeway and get them out of homelessness. $1 million per person in no like private sector setting where it wasn't limitless taxpayer funds would they allow that to happen. And our government, our spending in Washington state, you know, has ballooned. It's like doubled over the last like 15 years or something, and we're still facing a $5.1 mm-hmm. billion deficit because they will, anything they get their hands on, they'll spend. They don't care about saving. Right. They don't care about, you know, like not. So if you'll give it to them, they'll take it. And that's kind of what it's been in Washington State. If you yep. give it to them, they'll take it. And then they'll, it's like if you give a mouse a cookie. We talk about it all the time.
Right.
They'll continue to come back for more. And they will find endless ways to spend money.
But mostly on salary. They'll up salary.
Salaries. Like
those people are getting insane money to do these things that are not working. So
yeah.
I think a lot of it needs, like, those salaries need to be cut back to where it makes sense for the communities. Because, right. I mean, even at, like, sorry, I'm going to rail on this, but the superintendents of schools, it's insane how much they make compared to teachers and the, you know, para-eds and the bus drivers and all those. It is insane what the superintendents make. And I just think that all of those government salaries need to be they need to
down
make more
to earth.
Sense.
Oh, we're going to talk later on in the show about a real big fat mm-hmm. government salary that Dow Constantine has his eye on that is just absolutely absurd. Baron of Gray Matter, I just have to read this quick in the chat, said, Vivek said, even giving the government workers they fire a year of severance is still a huge savings. And one of the things I'll say, you know, people are worried about, oh, if we deport millions of undocumented immigrants, we're going to have a labor shortage. Well, then you can take the people who are fired from the federal government. We won't have a labor shortage anymore because they can fill those other necessary jobs that immigrants leave vacant when they go back to, you know, their country of origin and try to come here legally. So that's perfect. That all works out great. But you can tell I'm excited about this. I mean, I wish my dad was alive. Because my dad would have loved this. Like, this is what my dad lived for. He didn't even know Elon. I mean, Elon wasn't
be.
Oh, 100%. But, you know, my dad was very anti-government and very anti-government bureaucracy to a little bit to the extreme. But, I mean, this idea of, you know, the government only doing the bare necessities is something he was really passionate about. And I don't think we'll ever get back to that place necessarily, but getting rid of some of these, the bloat and the insane, like they did in Argentina when the president was elected there and he had promised, like, I'm going to get rid of all these agencies, and he actually did it. So we'll see what happens here. I'm super stoked about it. I'm very increasingly worried for Donald Trump's life. Genuinely so.
Just hide him in the White House. Just leave
literally,
him
you know, this is the only time I would support a politician in the basement. Like, you know, Joe Biden was in the basement for all the 2020 election. Put Donald Trump in a basement bunker.
In like a bomb shelter.
Literally in a basement bunker Situation room of the White House, mm-hmm. which is like several stories underground. And I don't care if he spends his whole presidency there just doing things, because I almost think you have to.
Yep.
Mr. President. I'm very worried. anyway, so speaking of government waste, lies, bureaucracy, etc., I've got to just tell you the truth about what's going to happen with gas prices. So the initiative 2117 to repeal the Climate Commitment Act, as you know, was not successful. Super bummed about it. There was a lot of lies and manipulation that the climate industrial complex put out there. They spent on that, and I got to double check the most recent numbers. It was something like $40 million. I mean, Bill Gates gave $1 million. Like, the Ballmers gave $1 million to keep the... These are the richest people in the world, literally. And they spent seven figures to keep you paying more at the gas pump for climate outcomes that are never going to manifest. Think about how crazy that is. So they lied and manipulated. They, you know, were able to pass a law that got this language on the ballot next to the initiative that made it, you know, tilted the scales. So it's insane. But one of the things we said is that if we don't repeal the Climate Commitment Act now, the high gas prices we're facing in Washington state are going to get exponentially worse. So leading up to the vote in November, one of the things we saw, and the other side was the no side, you know, in favor of the Climate Commitment Act, was pointing to this as, look, gas prices are actually trending down. Like, what are you guys talking about? Well, that was because the speculators, it's kind of complicated, but it's really important. So that was because Washington State sells these carbon credits, right? And if you're a polluter, you've got to buy these carbon credits to be able to pollute. So you have these outside speculators that come in and they scoop them up because there's only a limited number, and then they resell them, hopefully for more. But what happened leading up to the election is there was a a thought that, hey, voters might repeal this thing and then we'll be stuck with these carbon credits that we'll never be able to resell. So they weren't in at the auctions, these outside speculators, buying up these carbon credits, which made it easier for the people to buy them who actually need them. And so the prices went down, and that meant the prices were lower at the gas pump. So that's what was happening in the lead up to the election. But since Initiative 2117 was defeated, what has happened? Well, the price of those credits at auction have skyrocketed because now they know the CCA is here to stay. This is Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center. He wrote, as voters reject repeal of climate law, CO2 tax price nearly doubles. He says, Washington's CO2 tax jumped after the failure of 2117, likely increasing gas and energy prices compared to neighboring states. The price increase could double the impact on gas prices, increasing to about 45 cents per gallon. The CO2 tax is set at auctions on private markets when organizations covered by the law, including the University of Washington, BP, purchase allowances covering their emissions. So he says, immediately after voters decided to keep the tax on CO2 emissions, allowance prices on the private market jumped by more than 10% to about $57 per metric ton of CO2. This capped off an increase of more than $20 per metric ton during the last 45 days leading up to the election. Because what we saw is, like, this is more so July, August. Again, it kind of gets into the weeds, but it's really important to understand how this works. So July and August, remember how the polls were looking? I would say June, July, August. The polls were looking great for the initiatives. This is before a lot of that money was spent vilifying them and lying about them on the airwaves. So when the polls were looking good, that's when the speculators weren't touching the carbon credits. And so the prices were dropping. And then the polls started to turn. September, October, the last 45 days before the election, it became clear that 2117 probably wasn't going to pass. And then you saw those prices go up at auction. So again, they went up about 10%, $57 per metric ton. We'll see how that's reflected in the gas prices. But I also want to note, the same kind of stuff is happening in California. So there's a story going on right now. And I saw it happening on social media. I follow a lot of people in California because sometimes what happens there ultimately happens here. So you kind of get a good pulse of what's going on. But they have a low carbon fuel standard in California that's about to ratchet up. And so they were waiting for the California Air Resource Board to approve the changes to the program, like the ratcheting up of it to reduce carbon emissions. And what the it's called the CARB, the California Air Resource Board, has to do by law is say what the impact would be on gas prices. So the media down there is like, what's the impact going to be? What's the impact going to be? And they're like waiting with bated breath. Well, CARB said 49 cents a gallon. California already has usually the highest gas prices in the nation. And because of their low carbon fuel standard, they're now looking at an increase of 49 cents per gallon in California on top of the increased gas prices for their carbon auctions, because they have the same cap and trade program there. So how bad is this going to get? To talk about all of it, our friend Todd Myers, who's the expert on all things CCA, joins us. Todd Myers, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me on. Always nice to chat with you.
Yeah, so I'm disappointed the CCA wasn't repealed. I'm sure you are as well. Were you surprised at just how soundly it was rejected, the repeal?
I was. I figured it was probably going to lose because of the onslaught, because of a variety of things, in terms of ads. I will say, I mean, I've been around in politics a long time. It's not a surprise that people are dishonest. The attacks against the no or against the yes campaign and against 2117 were more dishonest than I'm used to. They said things that were just literally impossible under the law about it hurting roads and bridges and things like that. So I wasn't surprised it lost. I was surprised at the margin.
Yeah, the lies were insane, you know, intentionally so. And Senator Marco Lee, in my opinion, has a lot to answer for some of the lies he told about what the implications would be. But also, you know, historically in our state, you know, tax increases or anything, they've failed. Voters have been like, absolutely not. How much do you think that little line that Democrats voted to add to the bottom of it that basically said, like, this will hurt climate efforts and kill kittens, impacted the ultimate result?
It played a part. I mean, it alone probably didn't make the difference, but it on top of everything else added to it. It reinforced this message. right? The statement about all the things that would be cut, for instance, said transportation. Well, that it wouldn't cut transportation. It would cut transit, bike lanes, those sorts of things. It wouldn't cut roads and bridges. So it was intentionally misleading. The other thing, though, is that we have plenty of money. The state has a huge amount of increase in money. None of those things needed to be cut. So, the notion that, what now you what you can do in the future is anytime you have a tax increase, you can say, and we're going to spend $1,000 to childhood cancer, and you can say if you repeal this, it will repeal funding for childhood cancer. So it's a game that has been set up.
Yeah, a really, really corrupt game, in my opinion. We talked a little bit about what you have pointed out with the carbon auctions and their automatic response to the failure of the repeal. What's in store for Washingtonians at the gas pump in the years to come?
Well, one of the biggest, I think, areas of just complete dishonesty was the cost impact that this would have on people in Washington. Now, there are people who argue that cost is worth it, right? We have to address climate change. But politically, a lot of folks decided that it was better just to lie about the impact. Of course, most famously, Governor Inslee said it would be pennies. But people like Reuben Carlisle, who wrote the CCA, wrote the carbon tax, lied about the impacts and even said, oh no, that the low cost that we saw in this last year of 24 cents a gallon, that was going to be more typical in the future. Well, we knew that was false, and I said that to him several times and offered to bet him, right, that if it failed, if the repeal failed, the price would go up. Another person who said it is Rachel Smith of the Seattle Chamber of Commerce, who said, oh no, it's not having an impact. For the Chamber of Commerce to say that is really bizarre and sort of disappointing. Usually they're supposed to be the one who, or at least talk about economics in an honest way, but they didn't. So what have we seen? Well, guess what? Just before and after the election, when it became clear that it wasn't going to be repealed, the price of CO2 allowances, which sets the price of the tax, shot up. And over the last 45 days, it doubled. So this year we've seen about 24 cents a gallon impact. That has now jumped to 45 cents an impact per gallon impact. The actual state auction will occur on December 4th and be released on December 11th. So we'll have a better idea of the exact impact. But there is a private market of people who buy credits and then hold them and resell them later. And on that private market, they see the price jumping up, and so that's going to have an impact on gas prices.
Yeah. And then my understanding of how the program works moving forward is fewer and fewer of these carbon credits will be available to purchase at auction.
Right.
So it seems like it's designed over time to continue to increase the price of gas.
Well, again, that's the whole purpose. The whole purpose is to drive prices up so people shift to other options. That's not a side effect. That's the purpose of the plan, of the policy. And you're exactly right. The number of allowances goes down every year. It's very steep. Washington's goal for 2030 would require us to reduce our CO2 emissions by two COVIDs cumulatively on top of each other by 2030. Like, that's not going to happen without a massive increase in gas and energy prices. And in California, they're honest about the impacts that it's going to have on prices. California's Air Resources Board and actually the Legislative Analyst Office says, oh yeah, their cap and trade system, which is like ours for CO2, is driving gas prices up. They openly say it. They say, yes, the low carbon fuel standard drives prices up. Yes, they say it. Like, but what they then say is, but it's worth it. In Washington state, politicians, and unfortunately, too many in the media, don't even ask that question, don't press and say, everybody says this is going to raise prices. I mean, that's people say, well, we're getting to the point of California. California's honest. We're not honest in Washington state. But the other thing is that we as conservatives, we as people who believe in the free market, need to do a better job of talking about issues on like the environment and other things and getting the benefit of the doubt. When people make a decision about, do I trust this? Do I believe this attack or not? One of the things they say is, well, do I trust the people who are saying it? And do I trust the people who are being said about? We don't have the benefit of the doubt on the environment, and we need to change that.
Yeah, 100%, because or else we, won't be listened to by voters when it comes to pushing back on the corruption involved in the climate industrial complex and how some of these things, like if you really love the environment, You should want all this money to go toward helping the environment. But we've already seen the data and the statistics on this, that even if Washington's, I'll just keep repeating it, even if Washington's all of our lofty, impossible climate goals, where it's like, we're going to end carbon emissions or whatever by XX date, it's not even feasible. 30% of our land mass would have to be solar and wind, which obviously is never going to happen. Like, I don't know how that would even be feasible. And even if for some reason it were, and you were able to achieve all these goals by 2050 that the state has put forth, the net impact to the global temperature would be 0.003%. So, I mean, not negligible, beyond negligible. So it's insane. It's costing all of us money, and our maybe one opportunity to fix it has passed us by. So I don't even know what the peak is for gas prices before people wake up, but it's important to know that they are going to get significantly more expensive. And so families have to start budgeting now. You know, the government's not going to be honest with you about it. Jay Inslee's not going to be honest with you about it. Bob Ferguson's not going to be honest with you about it. So you need to tell friends and family, people who are operating on razor thin margins with their family's budget, that, hey, gas prices are going to go up significantly. So start to figure out as a family how you're going to pay for that. And one of the things I'll just say, and this might make me sound conspiratorial, you know, I've said it about progressive type governments before, is what they want is you to be wholly dependent on them. So, you know, they want gas to be so expensive that you have to take public transportation. And so they're going to have more money going to public transportation, more taxes going to public transportation. They want you to be completely dependent on the government for everything. And that includes getting from point A to point B. And that's the ultimate goal here. It's not to end carbon emissions, because they're not actually able to do that. They want it so expensive for you to drive a car with gas that you have to use public transportation, and they'll get more and more taxes to improve our horrible public transportation system, but it'll never actually improve. So again, they want you to be completely 100% dependent on them. All right. So Dow Constantine has been the King County executive for 4 terms, and he's ruined King County. I mean, I don't know how anybody could besides him dispute that. I'm sure his office would. Dow Constantine has absolutely ruined King County. He's made it less affordable. He has made crime worse. He has made homelessness worse. He's made substance abuse worse. In every way, except woke identity politics, he's made King County worse. Yet he continued to be reelected and reelected. I found it fascinating that he decided not to run for governor, although I think I know why, which we'll discuss momentarily, because the belief was always that he was going to throw his name in to be the next governor after Jay Inslee left. But I think he made a deal with the devil being Bob Ferguson, for perhaps a position moving forward. So Dow Constantine announced that he is not going to seek a 5th term. Wow, how generous of him, right? How generous. He posted on Facebook, because he quit X after Elon took it over. He said, "It has been the honor of a lifetime to serve the people of King County, but it's time to let a new leader take the reins and build on the work we have done." God, I hope not. No one needs to build on that work. And so I will not be seeking re-election. We must stay the course of progress, always advancing toward a future worthy of every person who is here today and all who will follow. I look forward to continuing to focus on our critical work of transit and transportation, climate action, behavioral health, affordable housing, arts and culture, and all we do to create a welcoming community where every person can thrive. Think about that. I look forward to continuing to focus on our critical work of transit and transportation, both of which have gotten worse. Climate action, which you haven't done anything on. I mean, you're like Seattle's the city where needles and filth spew into Puget Sound. Behavioral health, the mental health crisis is in every fashion worse. Affordable housing, housing's less affordable. Arts and culture, maybe there, I guess. I mean, maybe you've done stuff on arts and culture. And all we do to create a welcoming community where every person can thrive. You really think every person is thriving in King County? Oh my God, for the love of God, this guy has lost his mind. He really thinks a lot of himself. Not to mention all the corruption and like his, physically trying to remove his staff, independent journalists like Jonathan Cho from press conferences, etc. So what's going on here? He didn't run for governor. Like, this guy is way too egotistical to not like do something, right? So he didn't run for governor. Huge surprise. He's stepping down. His term will end January 1st of 2026. So he's got about a year and a month and a half left. What does he have up his sleeve? Huh. Interesting timing here. Because you might recall that the president of the University of Washington, Anna Marie Cossey, is going to step down from her position in June of 2025. So about 7.5 months from now. That came after, of course, the Hamasniks took over the quad, and there was all this anti-Semitism and people were angry at her, et cetera, et cetera. Gee, Dow Constantine has, in privately a lot of circles, and I've heard this from a lot of people, has his eye on that job. And the timing makes it obvious, but also what we know to be true, he wants to be the next president of the University of Washington. I wonder why he'd want to be the next president of the University of Washington and not, I don't know, run for governor. Could it be that the president of the University of Washington currently makes $1.129 million a year? One of the highest paid public officials in the state of Washington? Yeah, Cossey's annual salary, $842,000, an additional $250,000 in deferred compensation, $25,000 contribution to her yearly retirement, $12,000 annual automobile allowance, total compensation, including deferred funds, $1.129 million. Now, who appoints the president of the University of Washington? Well, it's the Board of Regents, of course. Who appoints the regents on the Board of Regents? Anyone? Anyone? The governor.
The governor.
The governor. And between Jay Inslee appointments, Bob Ferguson appointments, I guarantee that the agreement was this. Because they're all, you know, UW alums and stuff. I guarantee the agreement was that he'd not run for governor, and Bob Ferguson would make sure that he is appointed as the president of the University of Washington, and after ruining the state's largest county, gets to fail up, as we see so often, to a cushy $1.1 million job. That is exactly what's going to happen unless we start raising holy hell right now. The person who made King County less affordable, the person who made King County less safe, the person who made King County a worse place for businesses, the person who said he wanted to close the King County jail and end youth detention, the person who let the mental health and drug crisis spiral out of control, the person who has no respect whatsoever for the First Amendment, does not deserve a government taxpayer-funded job that gives him $1.2 million a year. That is the epitome of failing up. So we're going to raise holy hell to anyone who will listen about the reasons that Dow Constantine should not be the next president of the University of Washington. We don't wait until he announces that that's his intention or he gets the job appointed behind the scenes. We start it now. And if you are an alum of the University of Washington, specifically if you're, and especially if you're an alum who donates money to the University of Washington, today is the day to send a letter to the Board of Regents letting them know that you will not donate a penny more if Dow Constantine becomes the next president of the University of Washington. We start that today. You start that today. You tell your friends and family to do the same. We raise holy hell from now until Anna Marie Cossey steps down in June of 2025.
It is something that the salary for governor is just over $200,000. Mm-hmm. That's how power hungry Bob Ferguson is. He would rather take a salary that low over a million-dollar salary.
Right, he wants to run for president. Power. I mean, little does he know that no West Coast governor is ever going to be elected president. And yes, that goes for Gavin Newsom. There are some obviously exceptions to that over time, historically. But our states have gone so far to the left that that brand of progressivism does not appeal. We saw that with Kamala Harris. Right. That brand of progressivism does not appeal to most Americans, even Democrats across the country. It's night and day. It's insane that Democrats in the Midwest are the same as belong to the same party as Democrats on the West Coast. Bob Ferguson, I give it one term before he tries to run for governor, maybe two,
president.
Or president. Maybe two. But yeah,
Jay. I think he'd get less than 1%. I think he's less likable than Jay.
Oh, because Jay's like, I hate to say this, get your barf bag. Jay's handsome.
He is.
He's a handsome guy. Nice, he's got a big stature. He's got, you know, the chiseled jaw and the glasses, you know. Mm-hmm. Bob, not so much.
And he's just, we've used this
term
before.
And that matters. Looks matter.
He's just swarmy.
I'm sorry, but looks matter when it comes. Yes. I hate to say it. Looks matter when. Although Donald Trump's not the most attractive guy,
he was when he was younger.
But
though.
He has his stature, and he's got a certain. What do the kids call it? Riz, right?
Oh, I'm not. I'm not a kid anymore.
I hope I'm using that but, word appropriately, and it doesn't mean something.
But I think it's like a presidential look.
Well, he carries himself like carries a president, himself. You know? Mm-hmm. And Jay Inslee, for all the, again, handsome man, you know, carries himself well. I think that's the only reason he beat Rob McKenna, you know, because on the debate stage, it was horrible, but he kind of has that look or whatever, and if it was close. But so it's just, 100% that's what happened. Bob Ferguson said, Dow Constantine, don't, because this is what they did for Hillary Franz, remember? Hillary Franz was also, she did enter the race for governor, and she was like, I'm not going to let men tell me I can't run. Well, then what happened? Well, they, you know, Derek Kilmer, I don't think Derek Kilmer did that of his own volition, said he's not going to run for Congress again, and then they let Hillary Franz run for that seat, even though she lives in Magnolia, run for the seat in the 6th Congressional District, but then they abandon her. And Democrats supported Emily Randall, who's now won Congress there. So Hillary's out of the picture. So I guarantee Bob Ferguson made a promise to Dow Constantine. We'll push out Anna Marie, I don't even know how to say her freaking name. I did send her a book, though. I wonder if she ever got it. Mm-hmm. Anna Marie Cossey. And then Dow Constantine can have that job for $1.2 million a year. How mad would that make you? $1.2 million for Dow Constantine, get a $12,000 automobile license or allowance, annual automobile allowance, so somebody can drive him around. Give me a break.
If he doesn't get the job, if there is this backlash and he doesn't get the job, I hope he gives us something good on Bob. I hope he gets revenge for not getting the job.
Well, that's what we need to start it now. I mean, we absolutely need to start it now. And I know it's easy for me to say don't donate to the university, but I think a lot of conservatives in particular have already pulled their donations after the whole anti-Semitism debacle and how it was handled and the way that that university has continued to go further and further to the left. But again, if you're an alum, even if you don't, you know, donate money, send a letter to the Board of Regents letting them know why you would be opposed to any effort to put Dow Constantine into that position. So we've got to start that now. Absolutely. 100%. Failing up. Two stories in a row on failing up this week. Okay, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is going to have his regular Know Your Risk live webinar coming up on November 21st. I've got to say, if you have any concerns, anxiety about what's happening with the economy, and maybe you're getting close to retirement and you want to know how much risk you're exposed to, this is a really, really smart webinar for you to attend. It's totally free and you can kind of listen in passively if you'd like, or you can ask Zach and his team questions. Risk management is their number one focus at Bulwark. It's what Zach, who's the chief investment officer, everyone else, their analysts are doing on a daily basis. They're looking at the world, national, local events that could impact your retirement portfolio, and they're adjusting as necessary. So for the live webinar, again, you can listen in passively. You could be an active participant in it if you want to, but you can learn about how they use their risk management strategy to adjust to the very volatile world that we're in and protect your retirement portfolio from unnecessary risk. I mean, there's always risk involved, right? But risk management is Bulwark's number one focus. The webinar is also a perfect, no obligation way for you to just get to know them and have all your questions answered and maybe leave feeling a little less anxious. So that's coming up November 21st, 3:30 p.m. Sign up for free right now, knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, no supermajorities. I can now definitively say that Democrats in Olympia will not have supermajorities this legislative session. However, they have improved their situation. I think they're picking up one seat in the Senate, a couple seats in the House, but also there are two moderate Democrats who are no longer in the Senate. And so the concern is, you know, they were very reliable no votes on just insane policies. They're not there anymore. So what are we going to see happen? I think there's this push and pull between, you know, like there's a socialist now who Seattle sent a socialist to the state house, who's a police abolitionist in favor of rioting, etc., who is going to Olympia to make laws for the rest of us. Like, that's the first time, to my knowledge, that there's been an actual out and proud socialist who's going to Olympia. So that's this whole new wrinkle. But I really think there's this, like, you have Bob Ferguson, who's going to want to, like, succeed in his first year and act like the things he promised on the campaign trail are actually what he believes. So will you really have Democrats put him in the position of having to sign insanely far left bills his very first year in office? Things like rent control. So we wanted our friend Andrew Barkas, State Representative Andrew Barkas on the Republican side, to come on today and weigh in on the status of things heading into the 2025 legislative session. Representative, welcome to Undivided.
Good to see you, Brandy, and thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, so not super majorities in the House or Senate yet, but not great either.
No, another rough year, but actually I am proud of our caucus. I mean, we were up against it this year, having to defend seats and districts due to the redistricting, and we're prevailing. So I'm very proud. But yeah, it took a lot of resources, a lot of energy, and when you're on the defense, you can't go on the offense as much. But I'm happy and could have some good new members coming in too. So that's a good thing.
Great. Before we get drill down on some specific issues, is there anything on your radar this session, both things you might want to do, but also things you're scared of?
Well, sure. I'm always scared of the majority, and they've added some really great new people. So I think, as we've saw on that beautiful map of the blue Washington state, it's going to go even further blue, and their caucus will be absolutely representative of that. Tax increases, of course, we're hearing the gloom and doom. We're in a big budget hole. Kind of wondering where that $28 billion of surplus went over the last several years. But so we were that rent control is in my front and center. Just the normal stuff, unemployment for striking workers, they're going to bring back a lot of the good ones that we're just going to have to continue to fight. So really gearing up, but not just coming in with a hell no. We're coming in with a lot of solutions, and that's what I've been doing this whole interim, is working on solutions.
You mentioned, new members coming in on the Democratic side. You now have a bona fide socialist who's going to be working across the aisle from you, Sean Scott, who's representing Seattle. He's a police abolitionist. Certainly he's going to be in support of new taxes. I think it was him who already is out for blood on the Trump administration. So can you work with a socialist representative?
What I'm known for, Randy, is working with everybody. And in Washington State, you have to do that in order to get things done. I will do my very best. It's going to be tougher. And I've said this before, you and I've talked about this. This will be my fifth term, and it used to be where I could go to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, and they would willingly work with me. And then it became, I can't work with maybe. And then it was, I can't work with you because the caucus, their caucus has really more issues because of the leadership and the progressiveness. So now you add Sean into the mix. It's going to be tough. It's going to embolden several of their current members. I think the speaker's going to have a heck of a time controlling and reining in, but it also creates opportunity for those that maybe are now pushed more out on the fringes. So, what I wouldn't say moderate Democrats, but there may be a few more that are willing to work together on things that just make sense. So that's what I'll be seeking.
Well, I mean, gosh, it's tough. The one thing about Sean Scott, I'll tell you, and it sticks out in my mind, and it might speak to how he'll operate down there. I was hosting a debate for city, it was more of a forum for city council candidates when he was running for city council several years ago. And it was a forum hosted by the Seattle Police Officers Guild. So it was a room full of cops. And I asked him if he thought all Seattle police officers are inherently racist, and he said yes. So in a room full of cops, so he's gonna say how what he feels, and he's never gonna hide it, and for better or for worse. You brought up rent control, and I want to ask you about that because here you have a new governor coming in, and he campaigned as a moderate. I'm a total moderate, right? And so I wonder, do you think that Democrats would do that to him in his first term, make him sign rent control?
Oh, absolutely.
In his first year of his first term?
I absolutely. I good luck, Governor-elect Ferguson, and holding to. I mean, I loved his platform, Brandy. As you know, most of it on his website were, my pieces of legislation and ideas about the ferries and housing and everything else. So I can't wait to meet him and talk with him and help him implement literally our agenda, which is great. But I think he is going to feel the pressure of the caucus. This is, this is their hill to die on, this rent control thing. The good thing is, again, I'm bringing forth at least three, four pieces of policy that we've been working on to help people in need with a voucher program, eviction reform, which is needed at every level of the housing spectrum. We're also talking about doing a task force that it looks at the entirety of the landlord-tenant law, which hasn't been done in about 20 years. And I'm gaining Democrat support. I have colleagues who have reached out to me, some people in leadership that were talking about this as an alternative. So, and I'm, they're going to feel really confident that they have the votes, but they felt that way last year and the year before, and I seemed to find a way to kill that bill. We were a little worried because we lost two great senators that were moderate in Mullet and Vandeweghe, but I also have some new friends that are going to the Senate. So I don't think that they're as, locked and loaded with the votes that they think they are. So it'll be interesting to see. But I definitely think they're going to run it through and put it on his desk if they can.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we'll see how much he actually cares about those policy proposals he put forth and how much he prioritizes them over some of the more progressive or even socialist ideas. And hell, you know what? If they want to send socialist type ideas to his desk, I would love that. I would love to have him sign them in his first year and show everybody what he was really about this entire time. Just really, really
Yeah.
quick on that housing front, you'd mentioned, you know, some of the things that you're looking at, like eviction reform. I mean, that has to be a no-brainer. I know that, you know, it's hopelessly partisan down there, but seeing that you've got a guy in Bellevue, a landlord, Jaskaran Singh, who there's a guy who's been in his rental house for 2.5 years and has not paid rent, surely there can be some bipartisan agreement that that's not acceptable.
Well, I would hope so. And I think, you know, what we're seeing is that it's not just affecting, you know, the big developers. The affordable housing arena in Seattle, as you know, just got bailed out by the city of Seattle. They're about $14 million because they can't make their mortgage payments, Brandy. Why? Because they can't get people out who aren't paying. This is the affordable housing. This is the entry-level rung of housing where you just had a levy a couple of years ago pass millions of dollars to build. They're not building any new affordable housing in Seattle right now. As a matter of fact, several developers who I know personally are gone. They're out of the state. They're not going to build here because of that. So you have this coming together of some strange bedfellows, you know, and I'm hoping to capture that, bring those people along, look at it. The bill that I'm bringing forth is not something that throws everything out, but it definitely gets at the courts. It helps expedite things. It talks about the compliance piece, the safety to the residents, and really gets things moving because at the end of the day, that's what has to happen in order to have that tool back. So I know that a couple other people are working on maybe a counter proposal. We'll see how that comes together, but I'm feeling fairly confident that with these groups, we will be able to get something done to get some eviction reform.
Oh God, I hope you're right. I hope you're right, because if you can't agree on that, I don't know what the two sides can agree on, because
It is
that is just common
broken.
sense. It's insane.
Yeah.
All right, Representative Andrew Barkas, hey, enjoy your next, like, you know, 2 months of peace ish.
I wish.
Okay, yeah,
Yeah, it's a
to the extent you
reorganization,
can.
all the leadership stuff next week, and then it's just busy all through December with committee days and leading up to January 13th when we walk back under the dome. So,
Yeah.
hey, thanks for the opportunity to talk to you, and thanks for everything you've done and continue to do, bringing common sense and a voice of reason in a strange world that we live in here in Washington State.
Oh, compliments will get you invited back all the time. So, Representative Barkas, we appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Yeah, I love having Andrew Barkas on, and he's just great on those rental issues. And he is a landlord. And the thing is, like, again, if you can't come together and understand that, like, hey, we cannot have an environment and a regulatory environment where people can squat in a home for 2.5 years that they're not paying for, then you're worthless as public servants in terms of the Democratic side of the aisle. Like, if you think for some reason that would be unpopular with your base to say you can't squat in a home you're not paying for 2.5 years, who's your base? I mean, that's just insane. So it's this weird thing because I don't want them to pass rent control. I mean, it would be really bad for the state. I also kind of want to see what Bob Ferguson would do if Democrats, his own party, in his first 3 months in office, sends a rent control socialist policy to his desk after he just ran a gubernatorial campaign pretending he's a moderate. So we'll see what happens there. Of course, we'll be tracking all of these issues. We're going to continue our partnership with the Rental Housing Association of Washington as we cover these really critical issues, because it ties into all sorts of things. You know, the lack of affordable housing, the homelessness issue, what's happening with landlords big and small. So, by the way, if you are a landlord, small to mid-sized landlord, rhawa.org, rhawa.org, if you want to become a member. It's like, what is it, $260 a year, I think it is. And they can help you through all this, navigate all this nonsense and regulatory environment. So rhawa.org. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the slut, the South Lake Union trolley. What did you think I meant? First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark challenge. We all need insurance, so why would you handle your insurance needs on your own if you don't have to, and you don't even have to pay First Mark Insurance to do it? They've been doing insurance for a long time as an insurance broker. What they do is they have you go through the First Mark challenge, and you bring your current, you know, you gather whatever your current insurance is, send it to them before the call, and then you talk about your insurance needs, what you have. They go out, they shop the market for you. It's all completely free. They come back with their recommendations. And sometimes they might say, hey, your insurance is great, I would keep it. And sometimes they're going to be like, we could save you a lot of money. And again, even if you move your insurance over to Firstmark, you're never paying them for their services. You know, I got an interesting message last night from Paula, and she was one of those people who she did the Firstmark challenge. And she said, about a year ago, we tried Firstmark and they said that our current insurance was good. So they didn't go with Firstmark because Firstmark told them they didn't need to. So fast forward, their car insurance went up $1,250 for the year. And so they were told by their insurance company, hey, it's just an adjustment time for us. We're raising prices on everyone, blah, blah, blah. They're like, I don't know. So they did the Firstmark challenge again. They went back to Firstmark. And Brad at Firstmark said, hey, we can save you money this time. We can save you $2,500 by bundling your home and auto through one of our carriers, $2,500. So now they're members of the Firstmark family on their second attempt doing the Firstmark challenge. So I just love that. So she said, we're so glad we did it. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you and they're always going to give their honest advice for what is going to work best for you and your family. All right, play me a little sad song on the world's smallest violin, because the slut is about to go maybe bye-bye. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So ever since they named it the slut, I knew that this was just going to be an endless source of stories for us. So if you're not familiar with it, South Lake Union Trolley. Yeah, they actually named something without thinking about the acronym, the South Lake Union Trolley. And it's just a little trolley that goes from the Amazon campus, like up West Lake, beep, beep, doo, doo, beep, beep, just like that. Doesn't go very far, doesn't do very much, and no one really rides it. So it's been just this boondoggle in addition to the name. And then they stopped calling it that. They called it like this, South Lake Union Streetcar. Right. Now it's the SLUS because, you know, slut, and people are immature like me, but I'll always call it the slut. So, you know, it's had all sorts of issues. It was just back in August. Yeah, we talked about it on the show. The Seattle Times had done this story about how there was this electrical breakdown on the slut, and it had to go to the maintenance yard indefinitely because, like, the mechanics, the right parts were coming from overseas, and they didn't even know when they were going to get it. And it was like only averaging at the time that it had this mechanical issue, 494 average weekday passengers. That's it. Compared to a busier First Hill car that's like Chinatown International District, Pioneer Square, and that had 3,598. So it was like, okay, nobody's using the slot. Nobody at all. And then also the estimated annual operating cost for that many people, $4.6 million. Which is just insane. So there's been all these headlines over the years about how the South Lake Union slot is having issues. It's they're looking at canceling a deal. The actual price tag of the project jumped 43%, ended up costing like $400 million. So even the Seattle media has said this thing's like a big fat mess. So this might be the end of the South Lake Union trolley. Fox 13, streetcars once ruled Seattle, but now the SLU line may be on its last ride. Councilmember Rob Sokka, who introduced the plan to get rid of the slut, argues that the streetcars ridership numbers are anemic and the line is squandering taxpayer dollars. Oh my God, a Seattle City Council member who cares about taxpayer dollars. Sign me up. He says, this is about winding down and making sure we've got better taxpayer return on investment, Sokka said, arguing the city needs to prioritize bus routes, which draw more commuters. But the movement is getting some pushback from the Downtown Seattle Association, which I usually agree with the DSA. Not on this one. They said, we're seeing more residents, workers, and visitors in downtown, and now is not the time to take existing mobility options off the table. With looming major transportation projects like Revive I-5 impacting our network's capacity, we need to ensure the transit modes we already have downtown are functioning optimally, safe, and providing a great experience. I just disagree with the DSA. Like, let's replace it with something else, like get more buses online or something if that's the issue, but nobody's taking this. Nobody, and for the cost, $4.6 million, not to mention the $400 million to build this thing. I mean, all it is a moving billboard at this point. Like, literally, they put advertisements on the side of it, and it goes up and down Westlake, down to the Amazon campus. Like, that's all it's doing is a moving billboard that's screwing up traffic down there, and traffic on down there is already really, really bad. So, you know, it sounds like Rob Sokka wants to phase it out. So, like, a lot of things, I mean, if people rely on it, don't yank it out. Replace it with something. It's like the whole cop debate where they're like, defund the police. And I'm like, great, I would love to defund the police. But you tell me when we have lower crime and alternatives in place. Because they want to defund the police without any other option. It's like, okay, at least put these crazy alternative ideas you have in place before you just defund the police. So yeah, smaller scale. It's like, okay, well, figure out what you're going to do for the people who do rely on the slut to get to and from Amazon campus or whatever, and phase it out, and let's get rid of it, because it is a boondoggle. But I would also say to the Downtown Seattle Association, we need to ensure the transit modes we already have downtown are functioning optimally. It's not functioning optimally. Like, it's in the maintenance yard indefinitely because they have a piece from overseas and they don't know where they're going to get it. And it's had all sorts of problems. So it's not functioning optimally. All right. Donald Trump's cabinet is coming into focus. I love it, with a couple exceptions. If you're thinking about selling your home this year, contact our friend Wes Jones, and even next year, honestly, it's almost November. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure your home is looking its best when it hits the market, to attract the best possible bids and the most eyeballs. Retired Seattle police officer Mike Boggs used Wes Jones when he went to sell his home of 30 years to retire and move to Arizona.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price we want? Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. And he mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. Wes is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
And he's now in Arizona loving it. So I'm glad Wes was able to help him out, especially after his many years serving the citizens of Seattle as a police officer. Poor guy. He deserves retirement. So Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Trump's cabinet's shaping up. In fact, just in the last few minutes, there's been some breaking news. I was wondering what was going to happen to Tulsi. He just announced that he's nominating Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence, which I kind of love, because wasn't the federal government like tracking Tulsi on some travel lists, she claimed? So now she's going to be the head of DNI, which is sort of delicious. Also, one that just came down, Matt Gaetz. This is the one I don't like. Matt Gaetz as Attorney General. Mm-hmm. Really? Matt Gaetz is annoying. He's so annoying. He's been a thorn in the side of Republicans to get anything done in Congress. Maybe that's part of the equation here, where Trump's like, I'll make him attorney general and just we'll get him out of the picture of policymaking. That's the only one where I'm like not thrilled with it. So that just came down. But the Washington Post has been tracking. They have this handy little graphic, although now they need to add a few things to this graphic after the news that just came out. But the Washington Post has put out a few of the things. The one that is causing the most kerfuffle, Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense, which is interesting. So Senator Elizabeth Warren, he's of course a Fox News host right now, but Senator Elizabeth Warren, so offensive, she sent out this tweet saying a weekend Fox News co-host is not qualified to be the Secretary of Defense. And she said, I sit on a panel that wasn't that. He's a like 20-year veteran of the armed forces. He's a decorated military veteran who advocates for veterans, for like endlessly for veterans, for troops. He's an author who's written about a lot. I have one of his books here that I've read. And so it's offensive to say that or suggest that because now he's a Fox News host. Somebody said, I can't remember who it was, that it was offensive to our men and women in uniform to appoint a Fox News host as defense secretary. Why would a decorated veteran serving as Secretary of Defense be offensive to our men and women in uniform? I mean, how unhinged is that? It's just unreal. Let's see what else we got here. So Marco Rubio, he hasn't confirmed this yet. Secretary of State, which I love. I think that's a great choice. So, of course, some of these need to be confirmed by Congress. Some of them don't, like some cabinet positions don't, but others need to be confirmed by Congress. The other one I'm not so sure of.
I do think Marco Rubio was just announced as well. Within the last hour.
Well, yeah, but he'd already been. Oh, you're saying no, by Trump.
By Trump.
Oh, by Trump. Okay.
Confirmed.
Because it had been leaked in media, right, in media reports. But yeah, I think that's a great pick. Hold on a sec with Matt Gaetz. One second. The Attorney General one for Matt Gaetz is, I don't like that one. The other one, Kristi Noem as Homeland Security. I don't know if Department of Homeland Security. I don't know. She's not a border state governor. I don't know, that qualification kind of confuses me. But as I look at everything in totality, it is very clear Donald Trump is trying to avoid some of the mistakes he made about not appointing loyalists the first time around. Like, these people, one thing you can say, they are absolutely loyal to Donald Trump. Like, they're not going to be like the old one, you know, where he fired people who were leaking things about him to the news, like talking shit about him in the news, like anonymously and all of this. And he fired a bunch of people. He wants absolute Donald Trump loyalists to carry out his agenda, who aren't going to talk back to him, who aren't going to push back. Hopefully, though, some of them have a good enough relationship where they're able to set him back on course when he strays, because he will stray. He gets, you know, off on his little tangents or whatever. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that he has enough respect for the people he chooses that if they want to push back a little bit, because everybody needs that. Everybody needs a little check once in a while, a little pushback. But I don't think these are people who are going to go talk shit about the president behind to CNN and MSNBC and the like. They are going to be Donald Trump loyalists who are very lockstep with the agenda, the America First agenda that he wants to put forth. So that's really the difference that you're seeing here. And so maybe that explains like the Kristi Noem, who's been very loyal to the former president. So it's sort of a reward for being loyal. But it's also someone who is going to carry out his mission on the southern border and who's not going to ask questions about it, for better or for worse. I don't know about Matt Gaetz, though. I don't see Matt Gaetz being loyal, per se, to anyone. I just think he's kind of like a frat bro type who just, like, is in it for attention.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing for Donald Trump. I don't think he needs anyone who's going to compete with him for attention. So I can see some conflict between Matt Gaetz and Donald Trump. But Marco Rubio, I love. He's been very, very firm on our defense of Israel, et cetera. So all of those are good. Elise Stefanik for United Nations, that one's also sort of like, I think there are better choices out there. People are like putting out, oh, but she's so good when she's at these congressional hearings and questioning people. That's fine. I just don't know that she's, you know, she's really young, which, again, is fine. I think when she took her seat as Congress, she's a congresswoman from New York. She was 30 years old. She was like the youngest woman ever to be elected to Congress or something. But I don't know. Some of the choices are wishy-washy for me. But there's no question that the people he's chosen are very loyal. And they agree with his agenda. And they're going to carry out his agenda. Maybe no questions asked. So whether you think that's a good or bad thing. Also, I want to play this moment just because I thought it was really nice for our show called Undivided. Trump went to the White House today to meet with President Biden. I love that Melania Trump said no to meeting with Jill Biden. She's like, I don't need to do that.
Not necessary.
But Trump went and met with Biden, and I have to say it was very, very pleasant.
Well, Mr. President-elect and former president,
thank you.
Donald, congratulations.
Thank you.
And looking forward to having, like we said, smooth transition. Do everything we can to make sure you're accommodated, what you need. And we're going to get a chance to talk about some of that today.
So good.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much. And politics is tough. And it's, in many cases, not a very nice world. But it is a nice world today. And I appreciate it very much. And a transition that's so smooth, it'll be as smooth as it can get. And I very much appreciate that, Jill.
You're welcome.
Is that? Wow,
like
that was a pleasant
meeting. Like somebody visiting grandpa in the right. Old folks home.
But why was that fire raging so much? I'm kind of concerned for the White House. Like, that fire was way out of control. Biden's a little chilly. He didn't have his extra layer of socks on.
Well, but blood circulation, probably not so good.
Oh, man, we're so mean. But that was a really nice, normal. That felt very normal, besides the fire, like, raging out of control in the background. very nice. All right, our daily subscribers show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. A big thank you to all of our subscribers who help support our show and our mission. I ask, what do you want Doge to focus on first? I'm saying that correctly, right? Doge. God, if I'm not, somebody would have told me by now. I literally went online and I typed in, how do you pronounce Doge? And I think that's it.
Sounds right. Department, I wish it was called Dodge. Dodge would be
Dodge,
better. Something.
Department of Government Efficiency. What do you want it to focus on first? Cut wasteful spending, cut regulation, or eliminate full agencies? And I do understand that cutting regulation and eliminating full agencies will result in a cut in spending. But what I kind of mean by that is cut wasteful spending, like go in and immediately just cut individual pork as opposed to cutting like full agencies, for instance. Nicole, what do you think? What do you want Doge to focus on first?
Well, yeah, the wasteful spending probably. And probably
I want wasteful. Full agencies. Go
I mean,
in
full
there.
Agencies, where? Doesn't it all kind of go together, though? Wasteful spending on agencies we don't need. I don't know.
Well, but I just said that. I'm saying individual, like you want to go in, you want to cut in individual spending. But if you cut a full agency, that's sort of going for the whole whole enchilada at once.
I'm all in. I want it all.
I want it all. Oh, nothing. Okay,
let's see what... Elon to be the hero.
Well, yeah. I just love how really triggered fun. People are. Like, they loved him when all he was doing was making electric cars and getting us to space. And it's like, well, you can't make electric cars and get us to space and be a conservative. How dare you?
Never mind.
Oh, we don't support. Yeah. Let's see. Let's start on locals. 61% are saying cut wasteful spending, followed by 25% eliminate full agencies and 14% cut regulation. Patriot 26 says, actually, I would like him to look at all agencies. I mean, you need some agencies, but you should look at for waste within every single right. agency of government. Mm-hmm. Woody says, I like your name. It's just, oh, no, it's Papa Woody, 1965.
Papa Woody.
Papa Woody. Oh. Papa, not Papa Woody. It's...
But was that the purpose?
Papa.
I feel like we're on an episode of The Simpsons right now.
Did you want me to say that? Did you want me to say that? It's great. Woody says, I voted for cut. You're so immature. Are you crying?
No.
Okay. She's crying over there over it. I voted for cut wasteful spending just because you weren't the one on camera saying, Papa Woody, I voted for cut wasteful spending. I believe he will already be fast on deregulation. Weisscastle, start with the agencies, eliminate trees before trimming big branches, then work down to twigs. Yeah, that makes sense. Because if you lob off a whole big old branch of a tree, all the twigs are gone anyway. SLK9 seems like something that should have already been in place. I'm curious to see what is found. I mean, there is going to be... It's more work than can be done in 4 years. And I want to say it was Elizabeth Warren, too. She was just being all saucy, or her staff on Twitter saying, oh, well... Doesn't seem like you're reducing government waste to have two people do a job that one person could do. She literally said that. Oh, you appointed two people to a position? It's like, she's really quite off her rocker, Pocahontas is. I look forward to the return of the nicknames. I gotta say, I mean, they're petty and immature, but some of them are just glorious.
Now that you find him funny.
Yeah, now that I have taken off the TDS and I find him to be very, very funny. Most people on Patreon saying cut wasteful spending. Stefan P, I hope it produces results, but I'm more interested in how long the relationship between two super egos will last. Are you talking about Vivek and Elon, or Vivek and Trump, or Elon and Trump? Which ones? I think they're
probably Vivek and Elon, but...
I don't think Elon has a big ego. I think Vivek does. Yeah. But he's also, I don't know, maybe that's not fair. I don't think Vivek... It's not an ego with Vivek. I think Vivek is larger than life, like kind of Trump in that sense. And so there, again, it's like the Matt Gaetz, Donald Trump thing, where it's like kind of competing for like attention. Slim Jake, he says, be like Argentina, cut, 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 cut. Yeah. Let me see. Oh, Sean Lovelace said that. Does anyone else find it ironic that we have to create a new government agency in order to make government more efficient? Yeah, there is a little bit of irony there, but hopefully they keep it slim and trim. And if the net is fewer government jobs, I think that will be a very good thing. Guy farting on... Jeez. Why do you do this to me? Do you not like me? Am I not a nice woman? Why do you choose names that you know I'll have to read, like Guy Farting on X? Yes, all of the above. Okay. I hope you can get control of your...
Flatulence.
Yes. For the love of God. I'm done with you guys today. All right. Let's get to other comments, questions. Krista, I cannot even begin to explain how excited I am for Doge. I agree. Nightwolf, hope is the incoming administration will standardize the electoral process nationwide and be rid of the fraud. I don't know if they can do that. I think that's an issue left to the states for how they want to run their elections. And I don't necessarily want the federal government in charge of it. Because again, think of these things in terms of in the hands of your worst enemy, or someone who is absolutely ideologically in contrast to everything you believe in. So what if you had a progressive, you know, and Democrats at some point controlling the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and they want to make it a uniform system like Washington has? They want to model it off ours. Like, do you really want no ID? I don't want that. Captain Cranky Pants, Doge has the potential to be great, but I'm afraid it could also end up being nothing more than the fox guarding the hen house. Time will tell. The collector, the liberal corruption in this state is baffling, especially when taking into account how Washingtonians are so willing to be lied to and manipulated and abused despite the obvious outcomes and results. I 100% agree. It's like a DV situation. Baron of Gray Matter with a super chat. Sanctuary states should lose all federal funding. All schools pushing woke trans ideology should lose all federal funding. This will identify the rot. And that will turn Bob Ferguson and Nick Brown loose for lawsuits on the Trump administration. But again, it's just going to depend on where those lawsuits end up.
And maybe they'll stay out of state business then and, you know, not ruin us. Because they'll be preoccupied with Trump stuff. So fine. Go after Trump.
Yeah, it's maybe that's a better use of 4 years than, because he's not going to fix the things that are going on.
Keep
that's
your
a good
attention
point.
There. Leave us alone.
Charles says, what if I work 40 hours at my main job and pick up a side job for a few hours a week? Do I pay taxes on all of it? I think you probably would. I think it would have to be actually categorized as overtime because you'd have to have a way to categorize it for the IRS.
But I think that's a good point of how unfair that would be to some extent, right? Because if you have to, if you can't get overtime and you have to pick up another job, you're still working over 40 hours.
I do see what you're saying. Or maybe the IRS would have a system whereas anything over 40 hours, regardless of where that income comes from.
There you go.
And for us, I mean, like, some weeks we work over 40 hours a week, but that's not categorized that
maybe
way.
Maybe it goes like a certain amount of hours a year, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But
then, like I said, I think employers will just move people to salary, and you won't.
But what would be in it for employers, right? Because employers aren't the ones who pay taxes. That's from the employees. So the employers aren't paying taxes. Like that comes out of the employee's paycheck. Yeah. So there's really, that would just be like an employer who wants to stick it to you and say,
or the government, you know, gives you some advantage or whatever. But I don't see Trump doing that. But
we'll have to see if they do it, and if they do it, how they roll it out.
Seems really difficult.
Amy Dawson, we are living in truly historic times, ladies. Absolutely amazing what is unfolding and what's to come one day at a time. And I will say we keep thinking about Trump's safety, too. Yeah, very much so. Rachel just found out 4 more people voted no, thinking they were voting yes on the initiatives. 100%. I bet there was an absolute ton of that. Oh,
but you know what? So maybe
growling.
We do bring it back on a non-election year. So we gotta get Brian on board.
Yeah.
But
hey, Brian, can you spend $10 million of your own money again? No big deal.
And then, on a non-election year where people can really focus on how to vote on these, because
something's got to happen. Because gas is gonna. We're gonna see. Yep. I mean, you guys know. I preach, and then, but it's not. I'm not preaching to you guys. I'm never preaching to you. You know. Yep. You just got to tell other people. Diana Manning, $10 super chat. One thing to be cautious about: pulling Republicans from the House could cause them to lose their majority. Stefanik is from New York. The governor will replace her with a Dem. Could happen elsewhere. Yeah, individual states have different processes by which they replace open seats, and then, or like, you know, how quickly a special election happens, etc. So we'll have to see how all that works out. I agree. It's also really shitty for voters because you just ran. Every member of the House just ran for their seat again. So for instance, he pulled who is it he just pulled for a defense job, I can't remember, but just won his seat again. So it's like voters just voted for you and you're leaving just like that. That's part of the game, though, right? Brett says, worked in transit for almost 20 years. The amount of fraudulent spending of tax money is insane, especially in King County. Yeah, so they need to root it out. But also remember, Trump can pick our U.S. attorney in Seattle and in all these liberal states, and that he needs to pick a fighter who will go after government corruption. And they can bring about cases that involve corruption or abuse of federal money that is being sent to the states. So someone has to go there with that mission in mind to get the homeless industrial complex, the climate industrial complex, all the these other things under control, and actually send a message that, hey, if there's abuse of this money, not only is it going to be found out, you're going to be prosecuted for it. I mean, look at the amount of money in unemployment benefits. What was it, $2 billion or something, that we lost to Nigerian scammers. Nobody went to prison for that. Nobody, you don't think they should have? We only got a fraction of it back.
She failed up.
She failed up. She went to the Biden administration after we lost $2 billion. I'm not misstating that, right? It was $2 billion. $2 billion.
It was in that range.
Sorry, I'm trying to remember. And then the head of our employment security department failed up to the Biden administration. Wow. Progressives, they really fail up. It's quite fascinating. It was more than $2 billion, wasn't it? Are you looking at it right now?
No,
it was something like that. Somebody will tell me in the comments. It was along those lines. People are saying Pete Serrano for U.S. attorney. I'm sure he's going to be on that list somewhere. Wouldn't that be hilarious? If Nick Brown, you know, he's beats Pete Serrano, but then Pete Serrano gets appointed as U.S. attorney, and then they're just like fighting each other again. All right.
Give us $600 million.
Was it $600 million? Where am I getting two? I think it was $2 billion. Anyway, let's not do this now.
But anyway.
It was something like that. It was a lot of money left lost to the Nigerian scammers.
$36 billion in total for the whole country.
And that wasn't just Nigerian scammers. It was like scam and fraud and abuse in general.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't remember what it was. I just threw out a number. All right. With that, good comments per the usual. Let's get to our closing sanity check. It's a good one. Mayor Eric Adams, he's quickly becoming one of my favorite mayors in America. Like, I disagree with him on a lot still, but it's kind of like the Senator John Fetterman. Everybody was really tough on him, and now he's out there like he praised Marco Rubio as a pick for Secretary of State, saying, I look forward to voting yes on his, confirming his appointment. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love Senator John Fetterman. I shouldn't have been so hard on him. I feel the same way about Mayor Eric Adams. So he's having this press conference, right? Because obviously New York City, sanctuary jurisdictions. And Nicole, does this clip have the reporter's question in it? Yeah. So just watch this exchange when a reporter asks him about, you know, a potential conflict between the Trump administration and New York City.
And as you communicate with President-elect Trump and have communicated with him, will you express concern about mass deportations in the city?
My concern is one concern that we keep tinkering around the edges. We keep having this philosophical conversation about it. The voters communicated loudly and clearly. We have a broken immigration system. It needs to be fixed. That's the only conversation I want.
You know, why should New Yorkers, including migrant New Yorkers, trust that you will advocate for them with the new Trump administration, given that you have a personal stake in you know, winning the president's favor?
Okay, a couple of things. Do you think every New Yorker believes there should not or should be mass deportation? Do you believe every New Yorker believes that?
No, but you have said you don't think there should
be. Yeah, but you said, how can I advocate for New Yorkers? So I should only advocate for one type of New Yorker or all New Yorkers?
Well, that's tough. I don't think you can advocate for all New Yorkers.
Oh, really? Okay, so which New Yorker I shouldn't advocate for? The ones that agree with you or disagree with you?
Well, if you believe there should be no mass deportations, how can people believe that you will advocate for that with the incoming Trump administration?
Yeah, but you set up a question. This is very interesting, the question you set up. So there's certain New Yorkers I shouldn't advocate for?
I'm not sure that was my question. My question was, why should New Yorkers trust that you will advocate for them with the administration?
Let's go back again. There's some New Yorkers, there are people who stop me on the street and says, I voted for the president, and I believe there should be mass deportation. There are people stop me on the street and say, I believe it shouldn't be mass deportation. So what one needs to do is have the ability to sit people in a room and come up with real solutions. That's what I've been doing for 3 years. And so for you to state I'm trying to covet someone's favor, when this is what I've been talking about since the beginning of my administration, that we've been in this problem. And even prior to that, I've been an advocate to deal with immigration issues. So this is not about trying to get anyone favor. This is about making sure we treat this city and the residents of this city in a humane way, and that I listen to both sides. That's the difference between being a mayor and someone who could just give opinions. I got to listen to all New Yorkers, not just the one I agree with or disagree with. That's what it costs when you're representing the entire 8.3 million people.
Holy smokes. I can't even tell you how much I love that answer. That is exactly how you have to deal with loaded questions from the media, whether you're a politician on the right or on the left. I mean, specifically here, those are the loaded questions that Republicans deal with day in and day out. It's like, did you beat your wife today? Or whatever that old age-old question is. And he makes such a good point about which New Yorkers do you think I should be advocating for or should not be advocating for? And she clearly can't articulate the premise of her question. Wonderful sanity check. I love it. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, for the next 4 days, we are running a promotion on Patreon for 30% off an entire year of Undivided using the promo code Watchdog. That's patreon.com/undivided. Plug in the promo code Watchdog. You can get 30% off either a month or a year. Obviously, it makes much more sense if you apply that promo code to an entire year off. We are going to do our best to pick up the slack of the old media and be the best possible damn watchdogs we can. Arf! Against, I tried to sound scary, it didn't quite, against Bob Ferguson and what will most likely be the most corrupt gubernatorial governorship of our lifetimes for sure, because that's who he is. You want a better bark? Is that not a watchdog bark? I don't want to bark on camera.
That's all right.
Ruff. Ruff, ruff. The media is like, meow.
Hey, cats are fierce.
Sure, sure. what am I doing? Okay, thank you for being here. That has been Undivided for today. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. Special thank you to our subscribers who help support our show and our mission. We just appreciate you endlessly. Again, you can check out all things Undivided at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, or on any of our subscription platforms, Patreon, Locals, X as well. We opened up subscriptions on X, so that's a good way to get access to our exclusive content. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.